Connect and experience art at the Northfield Arts Guild. Visit our galleries, arts festival, and take in a performance at our theater featuring a full season of dramas, comedies, and musicals. The Guild's gift shop showcases unique art from over 100 local and regional member artists. Come enjoy music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra or the 411 Concert Series. We invite you to explore your creativity in one of our classes. All are welcome at the Northfield Arts Guild. To learn how you can be a part, visit northfieldartsguild.org. Or call 507-645-8877.
Art Zany, radio for the imagination, with your host Paula Granquist, is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, radio for the imagination.
Good morning, this is Paula Granquist, and you're tuned in to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination. Thanks for tuning into the show that celebrates all things creating, and of course, shares our stories as we tune our imaginations together. I love the art scene in our town, and there are so many times in this town when you might have to pick between two, maybe even three different events happening around town on the same evening at the same time. What a great town to live in, because there's always something happening. And even sometimes you get lucky and you can bop from one event to the next and take in a sampling of several in one big night. And I love those when we have lots of openings and concerts and things happening. But what makes this happen in a town? It's the people. The people who keep showing up to support the events are essential. The event makers that dream up all the ways that we can experience the arts, get us started. The businesses and nonprofits that host the events, and the artists that share their time and talents with all of us. It takes all of us to make this happen. And I believe we live in a town that creates a supportive community that allows people to explore their artistic passions and encourages folks to gather, to share experiences, and uplift one another. We see the creative possibilities in all of us, and we love supporting each other every step of the way. And that's a great quality for a small town. We are so lucky. And one of the great ways that we celebrate the talents and contributions of our artists in our town is by naming a Northfield Living Treasure each year. And the Northfield Living Treasure is an annual award that honors those individuals who have, over a long period of time, made significant contributions to Northfield in, through, or on behalf of arts and culture. So I want to add that element to it as well, is that it's also an arts and culture recognition. And it helps us to enhance the winners have helped us to enhance the reputation of the city and the quality of life of its residents and visitors. Nominees can be a practitioner in one or more of the arts, or an arts or cultural leader, supporter, or advocate. And this program has been going on since 2011, which is really exciting. Our first award winners were Raymond Jacobson and Myrna Johnson. And they have done so much. I hope that you do investigate. We have, I think, about a dozen now. I didn't do a quick count on that, but it's really a fun program to be involved with. And, you know, one of the things that the nominee has is a body of work that demonstrates consistency of excellence and inspiration to others. And some of the personable, admirable attributes that the nominee may possess include kindness, courage, wisdom, grace, authenticity, humor, humility, respectfulness, and generosity. And I'm going to check. Next week, you'll have to tune in. Philip Spensley is going to be my guest, and we're going to be talking about Lashbrook Park. But I believe he can tell us a little more about the history of the award, which is very exciting. We are going to be announcing our next Northfield Living Treasure at the annual Northfield State of the City event, which is happening on Tuesday, March 19th. At 6:30 at the White Center for Creativity. So I hope you will all join us there. And also visit the northfieldmn.gov website, search Living Treasure, and you'll find all the details and information about past winners. And I am so pleased today to be able to have a conversation with our newest Living Treasure, Judy Say Willis. Welcome to Art Zany Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning. Such a pleasure to have you. And also joining us is Julianne Shibata, and she is one of the nominators for her application to be Living Treasure. So we'll talk about that as well. Welcome.
Thank you.
It's been a while since you've both been on, and I'm just thrilled. It's such exciting times to have you both here. And like I mentioned, we're going to be at the Northfield State of the City on Tuesday the 19th. So mark your calendars for that. And there's a reception with refreshments after the event. And during the event, there's a fun little video that'll play that I'm looking forward to. I haven't seen any of it yet. Judy Say Willis has worked as a fiber artist for more than 50 years. Her work is rich in texture with exciting color, has strong eye appeal, and often has a message of environmental stewardship. Her works in textile, jewelry, and book art have been exhibited throughout Minnesota and the country. She's studied with renowned artists from around the world and has been awarded numerous grants. She's a driving force behind Rice County Indigo Collective, which we'll learn more about today, and a co-founder with Leanne Stremka and Sue Peoples of the Studio Artur in South Central Minnesota, which is now celebrating their 20th year mm-hmm. of success. That's unbelievable. That time has gone whizzing by. And your current artwork focuses on the use of natural pigments and dyes that evoke the colors of Northfield through our use of locally grown and foraged materials. You are, Judy, a leader in this community, and you've shared your expertise in the arts and generously mentored many fellow artists in studio practices and grant writing, and it's such a thrill to have you here.
Thank you, Paul.
You're welcome. You can get more details and see images of her work at saye-willis.com. And we'll talk about the class you're teaching at the Paradise in a little bit, too. And I want to introduce Julianne Shibata, who is a ceramic artist and educator from Northfield, who explores how ornamental patterns are used, adapted, and evolve over time, and how a viewer's own perceptions and backgrounds influence how they see and interpret the motifs. And your website is Julianne Shibata. Julianne, J-U-L-I-A-N-E, note the spelling, Shibata, S-H-I-B-A-T-A.com. And you currently have work featured in the Able Contemporary Gallery at Stoughton in Wisconsin, which is very exciting. So we'll talk about that too. So let's begin by talking about your studio space and get to know a little bit about you and maybe the works that you're doing, because both of you have such beautiful things, and we're here on the radio, so we don't get to have the visual images, so we'll have to do like a verbal tour of the visual things that you create. So, Judy, would you like to kick us off?
Well, my studio space really is a lab space.
That sounds right.
Yeah, and I know Randy that manages a greenhouse at Carlton last year stopped in, and he said, "This is a lab." You know, my husband said, "This is a lab," you know, and it is. And if I have dry studio space, it's even a bigger mess than the lab. I tend to explore lots of options and what can be done with things. Current project I'm working on is with Fred Summers. He wanted to incorporate Murex into a soft pastel and into his work.
Can you tell me what Murex is? I'm not familiar
Murex
with it.
Murex is probably the oldest color. It comes from the little snail shells in the Mediterranean.
Mm.
There was an article in the New York Times last week about the purple color, and it spoke of a archaeological find in Israel along the Mediterranean where there had been a dye factory. But anyway.
How do you spell that, just for folks that might want to look that up?
M-U-R-E-X.
Okay, that's going to be homework for us.
I've got to start memorizing all the names, but there are several different categories of this snail that produces a magenta or a purple or a reddish purple or a blue.
Sounds beautiful.
Fred, being as spiritual as he is, he had stories from the Old Testament about this color and the use of the color, and it was like magic, and it comes out of this dye pot and turns into sky blue. And, of course, the reading I did, I knew it was a vat dye. I knew it functioned a little bit like my indigo vat, so I knew that there was an oxidation process that was going on there. But anyway, we got pigment so that we could explore. I say we because Tom worked with him on it also, because he's got the potter's experience and knows what some of the clays will do if they're used as a filler. Anyway.
And that's Tom Willis, your husband, who has a studio as well, and a ceramic artist.
Yeah. And so we tried to make a soft pastel out of a few, it was like maybe 2 grams of this Murex pigment that we had bought from a source in Tunisia. And I made a soft pastel, successfully made a soft pastel for him using my indigo pigment. And since there's a similarity, chemical similarity between the two, I figured, well, then this should work for Murex. Except it didn't. It turned out to be a hard pastel. And the more reading I did, I realized in, you know, researching and over the course of time, there were many artists in Europe that were trying to figure out how to get a dry pigment out of Murex so they could then travel with it and use it in their work. I didn't find any reference to anybody that was successful at it. So we're kind of out in the cold, but what was supposed to happen is we were supposed to get the pigment from Murex. He was supposed to send it to my friend in France, who said, I can work with this, and I've worked with cremes, and I can probably work with it and get it so you can use it and make a pastel out of it. Well, French customs had a different idea about what was going to go on. And after they wanted $500 to $700, so it was sent back to Tunisia. So he sends it to me. I send it back to France. Customs still didn't want to acknowledge it and deal with it. When I took it to the post office here, she said, do you realize there could be $1,700 in fees on this? I said, well, I know he's not going to pay it. If he doesn't pay it, what's going to happen? Well, they'd send it back to you, which is what happened. So I took about 0.3 grams of dyed pigment out, put it in a little Ziploc, you know, plastic Ziploc bag, put it in an envelope and mailed it to my friend in France for, you know, I think forever postage, and that was $1. And he gets it.
Oh, gosh. What a story.
Yeah. And I won't even go into, you know, what he found. I sourced it from a supplier in Israel as far as the dried glands. I've used the dried glands to make a dye vat and to dye with it. And it's pretty incredible. It comes out because it's supposed to be either purple or blue, you get a kind of a violet color. I get like a spring lilac color. Mm. And I've been able to dye quite a bit with one little vat. One 2,000 milliliters. That's not very big.
No, and what fabrics work with that?
Silk and wool predominantly. But I think, you know, we came up when we were, I had a little test. First vat I made, I had a little test thing going on, invited some of the indigo growers in to see if they wanted to, they were interested, and Fred came over. So I knew when I pulled out this piece of silk from the vat that I knew it was going to happen because it's like indigo. So I knew it was going to be yellow coming out of this pot. And as I raised my hand and more air came to it, it turned this beautiful sky blue.
You're like a magician.
Fred just went ballistic. Oh, he took that piece, he took it outside and held it up to the sunlight, took a picture, was perfect. You know, the piece in the sky was the same blue. So he was quite happy with, you know, even though we weren't successful to get a soft pastel for him to use, he's able to use at least part of the story, and I've gotten him some pigment that will probably work. But so that's my lab. I do things like that.
It's amazing. I love your curiosity and the way that you, you know, just keep asking questions.
Always.
Yes. Always. That's been spectacular. And it's exciting. We'll learn more a little bit about that Indigo group as well. Julianne, tell us a little bit about your studio and what's happening. It's been a little time since we've talked.
Yeah.
What might be going on in your ceramic studio?
Yeah, well, I just finished teaching two classes at Carleton, so I feel like I'm in this a little bit of a spring cleaning mode, just to get my space cleared out again. This summer, my work changed a bit, so I feel like I'm in this transition period of kind of going from more direct pattern and looking at sources for world pattern and going into a little bit more of a more random and more free way of expressing mark, to think about time and layers and how the same mark can be repeated over and over again and kind of lose its shape. But then you have that history of the mark. So for me, like, I guess that time-based element in the work and going a little, it allows me to be more free, and I don't have to okay, I'm going to draw this raspberry motif and it has to look like this because that came from the medieval period. So I'm just like becoming a lot more free and loose, I think, with the mark making. And also incorporating different clay bodies in the work to make mark and build up layers. So I feel like, yeah, I'm going to less direct from pattern to more, I guess, life pattern, mm-hmm. you might say. So that's been a lot of fun.
Are you still working with porcelain mostly? Or
yeah, mostly porcelain, although I would love to make some bigger, I did make some bigger wall slabs this winter. They weren't successful in terms of end product, but they were successful in terms of experimentation. And those were stoneware because porcelain, you can't do big slab work. So yeah, still porcelain, but it's fun to see like other, I guess, thinking about decoration or embellishment through different clay body.
And lots of natural elements. That's what you've always been recognized for, and patterns.
Yeah, so still liking the flowers. And so I think, so there's a lot of experimentation happening and a shift from like one body of work to the next. But then also, I think I have a couple of residencies coming up this spring, and I just need to kind of be a little, I'm just thinking through like what I might do. So, you know, like Judy problem solving and trying to figure out what's next and what I might want to pursue and have it be intentional.
Well, I encourage everybody to visit those websites so they can see those images of some of those things, say-willis.com or julianneshibata.com. You can also find those kymnradio.net on the Art and Zany page. I've got those posted for you, so you can click on those. And I'm curious, because both of you, I don't know that I know how you began your artistic path and how you sort of figured that you were going to, you know, Judy, with you, sort of focus on, you know, fabric and textile work and jewelry and some of those things, and then you with Julianne with the clay. So let's start with you, Judy. Tell us a little bit about how you came to know that that was your trajectory.
Well, it actually started 70 years ago.
That can't be possible, because
that's possible.
You were
I was a little kid.
You had to have been.
And the dresses I wore were made out of feed sacks, you know, so the blue flowers and things like that. And I got really tired of wearing this kind of thing, and my aunt got me a job detasseling corn when I was like 12. So I made some money, so then I could go to the store and buy some fabric. You know, my mother had a sewing machine. I figured out how to use her sewing machine. There was a Singer store in town, so what I couldn't answer, they answered, and it just kind of progressed over a course of time. And by the 60s, anything that people wore, I was teaching people how to sew. And it was interesting, because I remember I had one of my students, I'm trying to convince her that you're really an artist. You're taking two-dimensional work and making three-dimensional sculpture out of it. And she wasn't buying into it. Well, this spring, I read an article about an art writer, you know, and they were talking about when fiber arts came into the scene as was somewhat accepted as being a fine art. And the story went on to explain that, and I thought, well, this is why I was having a problem telling this lady in the 60s and 70s that you're really an artist, you're doing artistic work. Mm. Well, then I kind of went away from fibers, life gets in the way and other things come up, and then when I had time to get back and look at, well, what do I want to do now, I thought, I've already done fiber. You know, I'm kind of curious about what I can do with jewelry. So that's how I got into jewelry. And, of course, in book arts, I took a class from Daniel Essek, who's phenomenal. And, you know, I really like doing book arts, and there are some jewelry things that I like to do, too. But I found that there's only so many hours in a day.
Unfortunately.
You know, and you can only build a stash for everything, if you know, with so much room. So it's pretty much been narrowed down to natural dyes. And I think I'm curious about that, because when I was that little kid running around on the family farm, I'd end up with green stains on my knees. You know, my grandmother had these beautiful purple irises. You know, so I was fascinated with color, you know, what nature has to offer. And I was doing a lot of textile dyeing. I had a whole series that I called Color Play, and you know, people are doing it now because I used ice and snow and things like that, and now it's a big deal. And it bothered me that I was pouring all this dye down the drain after I'd used it for only one project. Mm. And that was necessary because the fibers had to be treated with soda ash, and you can't use that anymore, so you just ended up pouring it down the drain. So I took a class from Michelle Garcia down at Shake Rag, I think it was like 2013 or something like that. And there a couple things he said. You can take a dye pot when you're done dyeing the fabric, and you can precipitate out the dye material that's left.
Is that like filtering?
Pardon?
Is that like filtering?
Sort of.
Okay.
But you make a lake, and that's they talk about lakes historically for centuries. And so I learned how to precipitate out this dye material, and today that's what I use to make pigments for artists, watercolors, you know, acrylics, oil paints, whatever, inks. Mm. Not so much for inks because I can use that differently. But you get it all dried and in pigment form. And then I figured out, well, if I want to dye with this again, I can reconstitute it. I had a jar of cochineal, it ended up in a paste form that it was from 2016, you know, and last summer I pulled it out as I was cleaning and reconstituted it and dyed with it. I'm going, oh, this is like magic. So there was absolutely no waste. And today if I have a big pot of something, then I always go through the process of extracting the pigment out so that I can later use it. So
that, I love that journey that you just took us through, how it starts off with something that a lot of us are, you know, fascinated by. If you see, you know, the yellow center of a daisy or the, you know, flowers in your grandma's garden or, you know, anything around the place that you grow up. But not everybody turns that into then a passion.
The interesting one right now is buckthorn. I mean, you know, I've dealt with buckthorn. I don't want to fall in love with it because it drives me crazy.
That drives a lot of people crazy.
And so I make this beautiful sap green ink out of it. It's really gorgeous ink. But then I can modify that and get the color to shift a little bit by changing the pH. But there's, internationally, all these people were coming up with dyeing with buckthorn. And I'm kind of, okay, buckthorn. So Reed Hendershot will give me some of his wood shavings or the bark from the trees, you know, from his work. And so that I can try it. Well, I ran across Dutch pink. Dutch pink is an intense yellow.
Mm.
And so I thought, I found a really old recipe. So I did the recipe. And I ended up with, my studio lab was just a mess from one end to the other because it was a huge quantity, you know. But now I have this, it turned out, it's a yellow. It's incredible, but you can get it to shift. You can get it to shift, you know, different directions. And I suppose that's why people have gotten quite fascinated with it. But I still am a little reluctant to
go down that road.
Pursuit of it.
Well, and that leads us to, because that sets up your class that you're teaching at the Paradise, which is Making Inks: A Quick Study, and that is on Saturday, March 30th. From 9 to noon, and you can register or get information at ParadiseCenterForTheArts.org under their education tab. Tell us a little bit about that. It kind of relates to everything that you've just been talking about, you know, the colors and how you can then get those paints or inks or dyes from all of the things that are around us.
Well, ink is pretty simple. I mean, you can take, and there's a lot of colors that are,
you say that.
Well, you put some flowers in a pot and add a little water, strain it, and you probably have some ink. Yes, you have to add a binder, and the binders are basically to get the color to stay on the paper where you want it to. I like playing around with inks because it's faster and you get this color. And the classes, it's always fun to watch people in the classes start playing with the inks. Mm-hmm. But you can use dip pens or brushes. I haven't tried the glass dip pens yet. I've seen them and people talk about how wonderful they are, but it's a glass that's kind of has a spun end on it. and it holds the ink. But
like a fountain pen, but glass.
The classes I'll probably use, I always use buckthorn because people want to, and I have enough dried berries. Colleen brings me, they have a buckthorn forest out there, I think. she just bring me cut trees, you know, and then I strip the berries off of it. So I have a supply of that, marigold, cosmos, walnut. I've picked up black walnut husk from 2 years before. It makes absolutely gorgeous, beautiful black walnut ink.
And those are all things right around us. They're just everywhere.
Well, let's go. What's in bloom outside in your flower garden? Let's see what we get from that. And there, some people are making inks out of like red cabbage. Red cabbage is fugitive, so it's not a good dye. But hey, it's not bad for an ink.
Fascinating. I hope you have recipe books, if you will, or like trade secret things that you've registered or something, so that
I always say, try it and let me know how it works. Oh.
That's a pretty good philosophy, I think. Yeah, an amazing journey. And, you know, I'm just so in awe of all of your knowledge and talents with this and your just curiosity, like I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. And Julianne, what kind of a journey did you have to discover that clay was the medium that you wanted to, stick with and, to make a career of?
Yeah. So I don't think I have as direct a relationship like as Judy did. I do know we had a close family friend who came to do some clay projects with me, my brother and me, and that was this, so fun, right? We loved it, and then we'd be painting glazes on the work, and of course the glazes don't look like what they look like until they're fired, so everything looks pretty abstract, and then you get them back and
it's like magic
and the color changed, so that was a lot of fun. But I feel like it took me a little bit longer. I always loved art in school, and time would just pass so freely, and it seemed a natural outlet to be creative. But then when I came to college, actually, I had to give myself permission to do art because I knew it would be fun. And I don't say fun in a way that sounds like it's not serious, because there's so much time and hours and blood, sweat and tears and heart in the studio. But it just, I think I'd gotten used to like school was, you had to, it was a different kind of like intensity, I guess. And instead of maybe frustrating myself over math problems for hours, I could actually do something that was just inside me and it was part of who I am. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important for younger artists to realize, is that by following what you're passionate about and what's naturally you're inclined to follow and you actually have joy, you end up being a more full person. Like, it allows you to grow into who you are. So I know that's tricky in this day and age to really... It's more risky to pursue art, but I think as a liberal arts student, you can do anything when you graduate. Mm-hmm. And problem solving is one of the best skills you could have in any field you go into. Yeah, so I basically was taking art classes, and I was like, maybe metalsmithing's my thing, but it was too small. Or maybe photography. I love photography, but then like the repetition through photo bothered me. Like, there would always be that dust spot I couldn't get rid of. But then when I came to ceramics, even though throwing took me a full week to learn how to center, making pieces over and over again didn't bother me. Like, so there was something about the tactile material, how soft it was and how receptive it was to touch and how it transformed in the kiln. And also the community is just a very welcoming one. I've said this before, but I feel like clay kind of chose me. Like, it's just something that I found. And then it was one of the first fields that I took initiative, kind of like Judy was saying, she taught herself how to show. Like, so you try to find ways that you can get better at throwing. And I don't know if I would have done that maybe with, I need to be a better mathematician. so that was really nice. That summer I worked with a potter who... I would do some work for him in his studio, and then he'd give me a couple lessons, and it just kind of lights a fire under you and you follow that. So I think there's intuition involved in pursuing your life path, and then also being open to and receptive to what others have to say, so you don't get in a comfort zone, but mm-hmm. there's a lot of intuition. I think that kind of tells you, like, settles in with who you are as a person, and that's important.
I think the important part in that story is you had to give yourself permission to find that, you know, like, this, I love this. This is okay. This is good to keep going and to, you know, investigate and further see where art might take me. And then you tried all those different things and found the one that, like you said, just there's a little click. I'm also curious, you both met, I understand, through the Northfield Arts Guild, because you were working, was it the gallery manager at that time?
Yeah, gallery coordinator.
Yes. Yeah. And so tell us about meeting Judy and what your first impressions were.
Yeah, so I don't. There must have been a group show, or maybe Judy, as active as she is, just came by because she's you know, doing something at the Guild. But I was introduced to Judy, I think, through Heather Lorenz. And just right away understood, like, it came across that Judy was really great at grant writing. Mm. And I remember that. And then just, like, the number of shows, it was apparent, like, Judy was out there doing things, making things happen. So that caught my radar, too. And it all this was expressed maybe not even through Judy. I just found out through other people because Judy's very humble.
That is true.
Yeah, and then it just seemed like, you know, I kept seeing Judy's name pop up in town, right? Doing this project and that project. And yeah, I'm glad that we live in the same town. I know sometimes we don't always see each other. Northfield's a busy place, but I feel like that's another part of Northfield is, like, when you do want to collaborate or you do have a question about something you're interested in, or maybe you need buckthorn berries, you can find somebody who will help you out. And Judy's helped me, like, when I'm still interested in textiles, but, like, a couple years ago, just trying to figure out more about dyeing and patterns and how they relate in textiles versus clay. You know, Judy was super giving of her time and lent me books and showed me the indigo dye process, all of which is super fascinating. And it's great that it's happening in Northfield.
Yeah, and folks, if you're just tuning in, this is Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination. I'm here with Judy Say Willis, the newest living treasure, which she will receive that award on the Tuesday, the 19th of March at the Northfield State of the City event. That is at 6:30 on the Carleton College campus on the White Center for Creativity in it says here, the Magnificent Crakeham Performance Hall. So I don't know if they've renamed it, but I would agree it is magnificent. And you can get details at northfieldmn.gov. They have all the information. There's all kinds of things happening, but also there's going to be a reception and some refreshments for Judy, and there'll be some of your artwork at that event as well, so people can get some visuals of what you're doing. And one of the things that you get to do as an artist, and you, Julianne mentioned this, is displaying your work in a gallery. And that, you know, is a really important part of your development as an artist. I'd love for you to talk about that.
Well, before I get into that, I want to comment on, you know, I've tracked Juliana along the way because her work is so calming, and it's beautiful. And I can remember the first piece I bought was at a show at the Northfield Arts Guild. But then I remember the time I emailed her and I said, oh, congratulations on that Minnesota State Arts Board grant. And she gets back to me and says, I haven't heard yet.
Oh, and I still remember that.
And I said, the board, it's
posted.
It's on the board notes. They approved of, you know, it was like 2 hours after the board meeting, because I always check that stuff to see who in the area is getting grants and that type of thing. And that, I just kind of giggled about that.
Oh, gosh, that was an interesting way to find out that.
Yeah, well, and just like Judy, right, to reach out and, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, and that is a part, because that's another aspect of your life. We can talk about the gallery and how that fits in. And, you know, I think, too, what that does for, you know, bringing back, so if you're showing in a gallery someplace else, and how, you know, it always states where you're from, and what that then people start to get to know Northfield a little bit, and you get to talk about your work in a place that brings attention back here.
Well, the gallery work, I really like installation art, and I've done, you know, a couple things. I did Where Are the Children That Linger in the Hearts of Those That Love Them? That was down at Owatonna. I would like to be able to put that up somewhere now. And I had some specific reasons for doing that show. I did one a couple years ago that was down at the Paradise, and that was women's hands, women's work, and it was, you know, over a couple of centuries, what was considered just women's work and needlework and so on and so forth. Today it's in the galleries. And as far as my own work in a show, you know, I tend to do more solo shows, but if there's a theme, you know, then I will exhibit in galleries. My earlier work, the jewelry work, there would be some group shows sometimes that I would be exhibiting in, but like I say, I kind of like. Kind of like the installation art. When I was working on my master's, I studied and read a lot about Ann Hamilton, and I was really fascinated with some of her installations because they filled the space, but they had this ongoing message. You know, that you walked away just knowing what the message was, and so that kind of I think that was one of the things that pushed me a little bit more in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, and one of the things, you were one of the nominators for putting her up for this Living Treasure Award. And so what were some of the qualities that you wanted to highlight and that you think make her a good candidate for this?
Yeah, well, just when you read off the qualities that the Living Treasure of Northfield would exhibit, she has all of them.
I would agree. Yeah, it's an amazing, but like you said, she's humble, and so she's not going to be the ones. That's why we have you here, so that you can, you know, share some of those stories and give us some of those details.
Well, I feel like Judy's just a really giving and helpful person, and I think I wrote in the nomination that, like, instead of seeing limitations, Judy, if you talk to her, there's a world of possibilities. Like, one of those people who can, well, maybe that won't work, but this and this and this could work, let's try this. So that's inspiring,
and I would imagine that's a bit like infectious, right? Like, if you're around that energy, then that you know, makes you sort of see the world in that way instead of, and that's a very not a stopping thing, right? It's a very opening thing.
Yeah.
And it helps everybody.
Yeah. And I think she's really good at working with other people to make that happen versus, I don't know. That was my thought. And then I think too, like, her rich knowledge. I mean, just the way she was talking about the Murex and this knowing where to source these things, knowing the historical background of everything. There's just so much knowledge there. And she's shared that by being a grant panelist and teaching workshops and just meeting with people individually. And I think she's also a shaper. So the culture aspect comes into the studio art tour, helping found that in Northfield, and also the, you know, Rice County Indigo Collective. Is that during the pandemic that was founded? Right? Like, again, just making these things happen. And I think it's a pretty rare thing to be growing indigo in the U.S. So the fact that Judy's doing this in Northfield is pretty remarkable. So I think her active and evolving work in the artistic and craft field is just so inspiring. So
mm-hmm.
Like, she deserves some recognition.
Absolutely. Oh. I think that it's so true. Yeah, and yes, and you should just sit back and take this in. And, you know, one thing people might not know is you have even helped me in my career here on Art Zany Radio, because Sunset Studios was a sponsor for a while on Art Zany Radio. And that was, I mean, that meant the world to me that you were supporting radio and the arts in our community. And I think that your name has come up. I'm going to give you a few minutes here. I'm going to talk about you, where people have said how you have been the one that has either, you know, like Julianne said, made a connection for them, or, you know, given them a tip, or, you know, somebody will be in a meeting and they're frustrated with a grant, and somebody will say, go talk to Judy and see what ideas she has. Your influence is extraordinary and in a very positive way in this community. And it's good for us to be able to get the chance to acknowledge that and thank you for that.
Oh, I think of myself really as being a connector.
That is something that we all see.
That One of the things that both Tom and I have done over the course of years is both of us have been quite active in Southeastern Minnesota Arts Council by serving, representing Rice County and serving on the board of directors. Tom did panel review for 6 years after he was done with the board, and that was reviewing all the grants that went through. We both have served as panel review people for the Minnesota State Arts Board grants, and I always stress the fact I'm from outstate Minnesota. I'm not from the seven county metro area, and we deserve as much recognition.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, and it's what I was talking about before, is it's the people that make those things happen, and they always need people to participate in those opportunities that support the artist in all kinds of different ways. So that's another way to be involved.
Yeah.
And I'd love to hear more about, we've touched on this, and I don't want to make sure we don't get, don't lose our time and talk about those two big pieces that you mentioned, the Indigo, Rice County, I got to get the name right, Indigo Collective, as well as the Studio Art Tour, which are both thriving and successful endeavors that you were a part of creating and founding. Do you want to start with?
We'll go back chronologically.
Okay.
The Studio Art Tour, I looked at Bluff Country Art Tour, and I thought, if they can have an art tour down in southeastern part of Minnesota and
into Minnesota.
Iowa, we certainly have got enough artists along the 35W corridor that we can have a studio art tour. So I got artists in Owatonna, Faribault, and Northfield. You know, Sue Peoples was instrumental in helping get them together down in Owatonna and Sullivan. And then in Faribault, it was Arlene Roth, detailer, and those people helped get it together. And then in Northfield, Fred Summers is the only artist that's still on the tour that was in the very first tour. So I think we got to give our accolades to Fred.
We'll have to celebrate him. It's every October. It's and so that'll be coming up this fall.
Yes.
So,
and you know, two other people that were really instrumental in Northfield were Jennifer Wolcott and Leanne Strimka. So we were able to get, you know, the studio. I think we had, I don't know, 13 or 14 studios. You know, it was about the same. It's been about the same size. Some add and some go. The Rice County Indigo Growers Collective. Well, it's Rice County Indigo Collective. I started growing Japanese indigo when my friend Michelle said, "Oh, you can grow Japanese indigo in Zone 4." Okay. So I talked, Steve Tweehoff was still alive and had Tweehoff Gardens, and he let me start and grow some there. Well, I was learning, and it was time to harvest, and I'd go out with the scissors and cut, and that's where Tom would always come in. Another way of doing things. I started some at North Star Nursery and was able to start growing at Silky Gardens. He has 200-foot rows, and I had two or three rows. So I planted all by myself with Tom's help about 2,000 indigo plants, and then you harvest them, you know, three or four times a year. Well, it was 24 hours a day indigo,
oh my gosh.
Whatever was happening. Tom said, "Why don't you see if you can give some of this away?" I said, "Well, I don't know anybody in Northfield that's interested." You know, he said, "Well, get the word out." So I got the word out. There were two gals from Wisconsin near Rhinelander, 4.5 hours away, that drove over two times and filled their SUVs with fresh-cut indigo, drove like crazy home to dry them to make the Sukumo Japanese vats. And, you know, I just got the word out. And before I knew it, I mean, people from St. Paul, Eau Claire, so I was able to get rid of a lot of it. And then some of them said, "You know, I'd kind of like to help with this project." So, you know, three or four of them said they would help. So the next year I just set up, okay, who wants to be part of this? So today, last year there were like 9 or 10. This year we got 8 now, 9 including myself. And they're from Hudson. There's 3 from Minneapolis, St. Paul area. There's only a couple from this immediate area. A couple years ago, we had some from Rochester, Afton.
And when they're growing this, are they using it for their art projects, or is it a good...
Well, one of the gals I found out last year, at the end of the year, she had gotten some work done quickly and had work in an exhibition over in Denmark. Emily Donovan, who is a phenomenal artist, uses all organic materials. She's part of it. So she does. I would say there was a gal last year that lived in an apartment in St. Paul. I'm going, how are you planning on? Well, I don't know. I haven't figured that out. I said, okay, you can use my lab studio space, you know, to extract the pigment and all of that. I think she just wanted the experience of having been able to do it. And so this year, we've got the plants are being started up at Farmington Greenhouse. And I think she's probably just planted the seeds in the last couple of days. Then the growers, the people in the collective, are responsible for helping transplant the seedlings into pots. And then when it's time to plant them in the ground, Paul will put in the water lines. We got water lines. It's really spoiled. He puts in the water lines, wants us to plant right after that. And one of the things that's drawn him back year after year is he's got this gorgeous, you know, pick your own strawberries. And so they like to come and weed. They'll come and weed every week to be able to go pick fresh strawberries. So they plant it. They got to take care of weeding. Mm-hmm. And if it gets out of hand, I'll remind them all, hey, you know. And they'll come, you know, two, three, maybe four times during the year to weed. And then we harvest. Well, Tom decided that, you know, the fastest, best way of doing that is if we use a hedge trimmer. You know, and there's all sorts of way that people harvest the Japanese indigo. A lot of people are purists and they want to use a sickle, you know. Mm. And I say, if people want to use a sickle, that's fine. But if we're going to cut on this day and this day, we're going to cut it. Tom will come in with a hedge trimmer. And most people that said they wanted to do it themselves were there when Tom was cutting. So last year, at the end of the year, some did go to Frost, but it's kind of like a CSA, you know. Mm-hmm. They're responsible, and they're responsible for the when it's harvested and when it's ready. And if they can't come and get it, they should get somebody else to come and get it. And people end up with like 100 plants. And you can get a lot of indigo out of 100 plants. Tom says, you don't need any more indigo.
It would sure would be fun to see a map of where that, you know, indigo that started here, as like you said, it was exhibited in Denmark, and, you know, people are in northern Wisconsin, and like all the ways that has.
Well, 2 years ago, she in Rhinelander, the people that came and got the indigo, what was it? It was from east to west, and it was from Japan to the Midwest. And I was in an exhibit. I felt really honored because the work coming in from Japan was awesome. And then Roland Ricketts had a huge wall of work in that exhibition. So I was kind of at a loss, like, okay, now what am I going to do? What am I going to do? So
I don't doubt that you will find something, because the way that your mind works, I'm sure there's a puzzle or a question you're pondering.
I think that covers both of those items.
Yeah, it's very exciting, and that those also have been, you know, incredible experiences for our community and for the artists involved and the visitors. Julianne, you've been a part of the Studio Art Tour. And what are the effects of that? Like, what is that idea that they germinated? How has that managed to affect the artistic community here in Northfield?
Yeah, well, I think now we just think of it as a given, right? But it wasn't always that way.
Right.
And I love, like last year, I just went to a few studios and I just love talking to the artists. And there's something just like with galleries where you can see the work in person, but it's very different being in a gallery versus a studio atmosphere with other artists and Glennis's cats running around. So I think it helps. It's more maybe laid back a bit. And I think there's more opportunities for conversation when it's a whole weekend event versus, you know, a 2 hour opening. Mm-hmm. So I think that component is pretty huge. And also, I feel like it offers more opportunities for artists to participate and join and offer ideas. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty important.
And it's a lot of contact, too, with the people interested in the art, and they kind of make a whole day of it, right? I mean, it becomes an adventure for them to come through all of these places, as you mentioned, in that corridor.
And people will be doing demos. Like, I've forgotten the gentleman who's the blacksmith, but he'll be working in the studio, and people can look at that. That's not every day you get to see that. So I think, like, Northville has such a diverse range of artists, and Judy saw something with Sue and Leanne to really kind of make this happen, and now other art events have kind of stemmed off that. So it just sort of makes, oh, that happens, we can do this, you know, so that's great.
Well, what's his name, this glass artist, Swears?
Rick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I remembered he had been on the art tour once, and I was thinking, if I could have him make me some glass mullers, you know, for people to use to grind their pigments when they're going to make, you know, watercolors or whatever. So I connected with him, you know. So before that, I was reading about, Brazil wood. That's an interesting history. We won't even get into that. But,
yeah, I don't think we
can. Have time. Another story, another day.
We can ask
Chapter
you about it.
Chapter two. So, Brazil wood. Well, wait a second. The Bowmaker's only ones that have exclusive access to that right now. Mm-hmm. Seems to me, Tom, didn't you read a grant on Bowmaker in Northfield? That was Matt. And so I got in contact with Matt. Beautiful color. Emily Donovan, who's part of the Indigo Collective, has used some of the Brazil wood color in her massive work. And so it's just kind of, you know, you manage to meet people and connect with the art tour, with the clay tour, and with those types of activities.
Yeah, it does. It makes our community incredibly, it helps everybody, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it can help the businesses as people stop along the way and grab a snack or coffee, and it helps make those connections with the artists. It helps people, you know, just to know what it is to be an artist. And like, I love it because I get to, like you said, see the studio space and the process. And that's always fascinating to me, how things develop. And then the connections that you make are essential. And you are just such a treasure. It is truly exciting to have you be a part of the Living Treasure Award. What are you looking forward to Tuesday? And you've already, I know you've done the video. And so they did an interview with you. And you as well, Julian? Yeah.
I don't have anything to wear.
Just be yourself.
Why is this? You know, pre-COVID, you know, everything's just done. I just haven't gotten back to figure out how to even shop. Let's see, what have I gotten myself?
Well, I think you'll find something.
Probably.
Maybe you can do something. I'm sure one of the things you might have is one of those beautiful scarves that you've always dyed, the silk scarves, and those are really special and incredible. And it's just such an exciting thing to share your story and to see what questions you're going to pursue next, because I love that you are doing that constantly, and it's inspiring to all of us. Is there something that's in the works that you could, that you're, you know, thinking about for a next?
Color in place.
Color in place. Yeah. Tell us what that means.
Whether that's plant, mineral, bug, whatever, you know, I tell Fred, okay, let's go out to the bluffs and let me gather some of the color that we see in the stones around us and see if I can extract, you know, it's not pigment, but extract what you need to make a pastel.
I was just
watercolor.
Just thinking as you were talking that somebody needs to get that, and then let's call Paul and Sid Krause and see if he can videotape the conversation between the two of you walking in the woods, and just what you might see would be incredible. And that brings me to one thing we didn't mention was the sort of the dye book that you did. That, you know, kind of gives a little bit of the story of the Nature's Gentle Colors close to home, a little booklet that you did.
I did that. It was during COVID. I had gotten a creative support grant from the Minnesota State Arts Board, and that was one of the things I felt, you know, that I can do. And I tend to give that out today in a lot of classes. I know Botanical Colors has sold it on their website. But I tend to give it out to people that take, you know, the classes that might be interested in it.
Right.
So that was one of the things that came out of COVID.
And Julianne's quote in her application, which I loved, which was that mentions that Judy has lived in rural Minnesota her entire life, and her creations are literally saturated with the very colors of Northfield, black walnuts, butternut, sumac, and goldenrod, to name a few. All have all been processed into dyes to transform a white piece of fabric into one that is fused with a specific place and story.
Yeah.
That's such a great line. I mean, it's so true. That is really representative of who she is.
Well, Judy had the hard part. I just had the easy part of writing what she does.
Right.
She figured it out.
And so it's going to be a thrill to celebrate you. And again, I want to invite everybody to the Northfield State of the City event, which is happening Tuesday, March 19th at the Carleton College campus, White Center for Creativity, and a perfect way to bring attention to all that you do. And I can't wait to be there with you.
Well, we'll see how it goes.
Thanks, Judy.
Yes. Thank you so much. Judy Say Willis and Julianne Shibata, for being a part of Art Zany Radio. I know there's a lot of art happening this weekend and this week around town, so I hope that you will always make time to add more art into your life. And, of course, always remember to enjoy your imagination. See you next week on Art Zany Radio.
You've been listening to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination, with your host, Paula Granquist. Art Zany is brought to you each week by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault. The Paradise Center for the Arts is a vibrant cultural and artistic gathering spot in historic downtown Faribault. The Paradise is committed to offering high-quality visual and performing art opportunities for Faribault and our region. Regular events spotlight some of the best artists and musicians in our area and throughout Minnesota and the Upper Midwest. Our beautifully restored facility includes art galleries, classrooms, clay and textile labs, a gift shop and rehearsal spaces, in addition to a 300-seat auditorium. Visit ParadiseCenterForTheArts.org for a full schedule of events or call our box office at 507-332-7372.